Wednesday, November 15th, 12:30 p.m. Mr. Rice's second reply. Mr. President, I have no objection to the rule suggested by my friend Mr. Campbell requiring the respondent to follow the affirmant, provided there be also a rule obliging the latter to proceed in the argument. But I must protest against being required to say but little on the subject in hand because the affirmant has done so. With regard to the ecclesiastical character of this discussion, I remark that there are but two ways in which things of this kind can be done, namely, either by the church as a body or by individuals. The Synod of Kentucky had no authority to select persons for such a purpose. My appointment to conduct this debate, therefore, could not have been made by that body. And if all the elders and ministers of the synod had, as individuals agreed, to select me, it would have been only the act of so many individuals to which the Presbyterian Church in Kentucky would have been no more responsible than if it had been done in England. The debate is, therefore, an individual affair. It has never been stated by us how many persons were consulted about it or what number agreed to my appointment to conduct it, nor does it appear by how many my friend was appointed nor whether he was appointed at all. There is no ecclesiastical body connected with his church, sustaining the same relation to it which is sustained by the Synod of Kentucky to our church. His appointment, therefore, must have been simply by individuals. How many have been concerned in it, or what importance his church may attach to it, I know not. But I am not willing to involve ecclesiastical bodies in matters with which they have nothing to do. My worthy friend made a statement concerning the early reformers which is calculated to make an impression favorable to his cause. He says that all the early reformers were immersionists, and that the great majority of Christians have always practiced immersion. That I must have forgotten my reading. I presume I was understood by the audience. I said not that 999 in every 1,000 were opposed to immersion, but that they did not believe immersion essential to the validity of the ordinance. That they never did make the discovery which my friend has made, that nothing short of immersion is baptism. And if he can name one of the reformers who made the discovery for which he is now contending that immersion only is Christian baptism, I hope he will not fail to do it. In the 3rd and immediately following centuries, triune immersion was practiced, the subjects being divested of their garments. Yet those who adopted this practice never learned that baptizo means only to immerse. Gradually again, pouring and sprinkling became most common. Yet immersion continued to be very frequently practiced even to the times of Luther, but all conceded the validity of pouring and sprinkling. None disputed what had been so long admitted. But my friend Mr. Campbell has said that as biblical criticism progressed, we have gained more light on such subjects. So it appears that as more light has been obtained, the great majority of Christians have abandoned the defense and the practice of immersion. He cannot, however, point to one reformer of any considerable standing who maintained the doctrine for which he is contending. However favorable some of them may have been to the practice of immersion, not one of them ever admitted that our Savior commanded immersion only. They with one consent admitted sprinkling and pouring to be valid baptism, and they regarded themselves as obeying the command of Christ, "Go teach all nations, baptizing them." And when they administered the ordinance by sprinkling or pouring, having been baptized by sprinkling, they lived and died in the belief that their baptism was valid. Both modes were anciently practiced, and if our immersionist friends had continued on the ground of the old immersionists, if they had simply maintained that immersion is the preferable mode, they might have enjoyed their opinion without controversy. But when they contend that all who have received the ordinances by pouring or sprinkling are unbaptized, and that sprinkling is a human invention, they assume a position occupied by very few, and we are constrained to demur. Let me revert to the principle advanced by Mr. Campbell that specific words having a leading syllable in all their inflections retain their original import. Language, he admits, is always changing, and usage only determines the meaning of words. But the principle he now inculcates is that specific words retain their original meaning. If, for example, the original idea was dip, the word retaining the leading syllable will retain also this idea in all its combinations. Now, I stand in opposition to this principle. There is no such principle recognized. There are facts, and I will produce them in the very face of it. For example, the word bapto, as Mr. Campbell and immersionists generally contend, contained originally the idea only of immersing. I now understand him to abandon this ground. He now says that literally it signifies to dip, and figuratively to die. For this, I should like to see some authority, because Mr. Carson says it signifies to die as literally as to dip, and he asserts that the history of 1,000 words prove the principle. He gives an example, which I will read. He says, page 60, that Hippocrates uses bapto to denote dying by dropping the dying liquid on the thing dyed. When it drops upon the garments, they are dyed. This, says he, surely is not dying by dipping. Where is there figurative here? There is a literal fluid dropped on a literal garment, and when a thing is dyed by dropping or sprinkling, it is dyed as literally as if done by dipping. I will, if necessary, furnish further examples. On the 61st page, Carson gives another. Nearchus relates that the Indians dye their beards. There are many similar examples. Dr. Gale maintained that when bapto signified to dye, it retained the idea of dipping, but Mr. Carson differs with him and says the history of 1,000 words proves that it signifies to dye by sprinkling as literally as by dipping. Till my worthy friend produces some authority in support of the principle he has advanced, I must beg leave to dissent from it. Mr. Campbell says if he can approve that baptizo expresses a specific action, he proves that it has but one meaning, and therefore that it can never express the act of pouring or sprinkling. Carson maintains that bapto expresses a specific action, and yet he proves that it has another meaning, which is literal, namely to dye by dipping or by sprinkling. And if it expresses the color of a thing by dropping or sprinkling, it is certainly not the original idea of dipping. Let it be remembered, we are not contending that baptizo expresses definitely the act of pouring or sprinkling. The circumstances and the connection sometimes proved that sinking or plunging is the thing done. Sometimes that pouring or sprinkling is the thing done. Sometimes that partial dipping or wetting is meant. It is a universal rule of language that when a word has several meanings, the connection in which it occurs must determine in any given case which is the true meaning. For example, the word faith has in the scriptures three distinct meanings. It denotes the act of believing, or the exercise of the mind in believing, as in the passage, "By grace are ye saved through faith." It denotes the truth or doctrines believed, as when a persons are said to make shipwreck of the faith. And it signifies fidelity or faithfulness, as when it is said, "What if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God of none effect?" Now, how are we to determine, in any particular case, which of these meanings are the true one? Evidently, by the connection. Dr. George Campbell says the word flesh has in the scriptures six meanings, not more than one of which is found in any classic writer. How shall we determine, in any particular case, which is the true meaning, but by the connection? We are not contending that baptizo never signifies to immerse, but that it does not definitely express mode. It expresses the thing done. The circumstances and the context may determine the mode of doing it, though the word itself does not. It is true, as my friend says, that if a man were indicted for dipping a person, and it were proved that he had only sprinkled him, the action could not be maintained against him. This, however, only proves what no one denies, that dipping is not sprinkling. But let him prove that baptizo signifies only to immerse, and I will yield the point, that it is sometimes used in the sense of dipping, I admit, and that it is sometimes used in the sense of pouring or sprinkling, I can prove. That it sometimes signifies simply to wash, I can demonstrate by the very highest authority. Each of these statements I will establish in due time. But I fear my friend Mr. Campbell will consider me as anticipating his argument. If he will not again prefer this charge against me, I will state as I am prepared to prove that three of the oldest and best versions have rendered the word bapto to sprinkle, and one of the most learned of the Greek fathers gave it the same signification. Trevelyus, Mr. Campbell says, originally gave to the word baptizo but two meanings, mergo and lavo, to immerse and to wash. Well, this is all I contend for. For if it sometimes signifies to dip, and sometimes to wash, how shall we determine in any case which is the true meaning? Mergo and lavo are the Latin words by which it is defined, and we know that lavo signifies to wash in general without reference to mode. The most ancient lexicographers moreover define baptizo to cleanse, no matter in what mode it is done. If, then, this word has sometimes one meaning and sometimes another, how can it be a specific term expressing a definite action? If Mr. Campbell cannot prove that it is always used in the definite sense of immersing, he must give up the argument. It is true, as he says, that the word circumcision signifies cutting round, but who, I ask, could have understood by this word alone how the ordinance was to be administered? By the accompanying of directions, it might be known. But I affirm that no man could determine by the word alone what precisely was the action to be performed. Again, take the word depnon, sometimes used to denote the Lord's Supper. From this word, we could not determine what element should be used, in what quantity it should be received, or in what manner the ordinance should be observed. Yet my friend Mr. Campbell labors to prove that when our Savior employed a particular word to denote an ordinance, it must necessarily express the mode in which it is always to be administered and received. He says he's glad to hear me express my conviction that the original meaning of baptizo was to immerse. I did not say so. I said I could safely admit it, though he could not prove it. Critics are not agreed whether to dip or to dye was the original meaning. Professor Stewart expresses the opinion, as far as he can judge, that to dip was the original sense and to dye was a secondary meaning. Others, however, contend that to dye was the primary or original meaning. The word bapto, as far back as we can trace it, was used in both senses. It may be true, therefore, that to dye or color was the original meaning and to dip a secondary meaning. Critics have not determined this question, nor can they prove that to immerse was the original meaning of the word. But as I before remarked, I can concede this point and yet fully sustain my position. Still, Mr. Campbell cannot prove it, and therefore I shall not admit it. Mr. Campbell asks, how could baptizo, if it signifies specifically to dip or immerse, come to express an entirely different action? I answer, it does not definitely express dipping or immersing. The lexicons, as we have seen, define it to wash as well as to immerse. Suppose, then, you direct your son to wash his hands, and he has water poured upon them. Does he not obey your command? Or suppose he dips them in water. Does he not obey you? He does. You direct him to do a certain thing, but do not prescribe any particular mode in which he must do it. He may therefore select any mode he prefers. So the word baptizo expresses the application of water to a person or subject, but the precise mode of its application must be determined by the circumstances and the design of the ordinance. My friend gave us a dissertation on the words dip, bathe, pour, and sprinkle, as they occur in Leviticus. If he would not consider me as anticipating him, I could prove that the word bapto is used in the Bible in several senses. Dipping, partial dipping, wetting, or smearing. Thus it is said, the priest shall dip his finger from the oil, and etc. Is it true that he did literally dip his finger from it? Does such an expression signify to dip in? Or does it not rather mean, as Professor Stewart says, to wet or smear by means of the oil? There is properly no dipping in the case. The priest was simply to moisten or wet his finger with the fluid so as to sprinkle it. If my friend will not charge me with anticipating him, I will say that the word bapto occurs in the scriptures again and again in connection with a preposition apo, from, and evidently in such cases it does not express mode. There are in the Greek language words that definitely signify to immerse, and words which signify to pour and to sprinkle. But I deny that bapto or baptizo definitely expresses the one or the other of these modes. I can find a Greek word that does uniformly signify to immerse, but baptizo is not the word. The word baptisma is the name of an ordinance instituted by our Savior for the benefit of His church. It denotes the application of water to a proper subject in the name of the Trinity, but it does not express the precise mode of applying the water. But Mr. Campbell has insisted so much on the necessity of employing a specific term expressing a definite action to denote a religious ordinance that I must read a passage in Numbers 19:19, in which we find mentioned one of the washings to which I have before referred. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. And on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and he shall be clean at even. Here we find sprinkling, washing, and bathing. I invite your attention to the phrase, he shall bathe himself. The Hebrew word translated bathe is a generic term signifying simply to wash, and it is translated in the Septuagint by the Greek word luo, to wash. Here the unclean person is commanded to do a certain thing, to wash himself. But does the word employed describe the mode in which he is to do it? It does not. But my friend insists that the word employed must express a definite action and that it must precisely express the manner in which the ordinance is to be performed. I can find many examples similar to the one just adduced. Now, if his rule requiring a specific term is good in one instance, why not in another? But I can point to other rites, the mode of administering which is not expressed by the word employed. My friend Mr. Campbell admits that baptizo may mean sinking to the bottom, but he seems disposed to contend that it more properly implies that the thing immersed is again raised out of the water, and he refers to the language of a Greek writer concerning Athens, which he explains to mean that Athens might be overwhelmed but not destroyed. But if I understand the word overwhelm, I should think a city overwhelmed is well nigh destroyed. But by an appeal to classic writers, I can prove that in 4/5 of the instances in which it is supposed to favor immersion, it signifies sinking to the bottom. Suppose then an individual should understand the command to be baptized in the sense of sinking, what would be the result? To sink is the common meaning of the word in the classics, but if you substitute the word sink for baptized in every place where baptizo occurs in the scriptures, it makes nonsense. As to the idea advanced by my friend that the syllable zo in baptizo implies that the action is to be performed quickly, I know of no evidence whatsoever that it is true. Dr. Carson, I believe that he's a doctor, says that baptizo denotes the putting of a thing into water, but whether it is raised out again or sinks to the bottom cannot be ascertained by the word, but must be learned from the circumstances. But I should be pleased to see some few examples adduced from the classics in which the word baptizo expresses the action contended for by Mr. Campbell as essential to baptism. For I believe there is scarcely an instance in which it expresses the actions he performs in baptizing. Time expired.